Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Empty Notes, New Republic Blues. In this new podcast, I, Moon, will work through the various notes that have piled up through my writing process. These can be pop cultural hot takes, philosophical musings, political ideas. If you've been a writer for a while, these ideas are just everywhere. Sometimes I turn them into tweets, sometimes I turn them into elaborate essays. But in this podcast, I'd like to discuss the sort of half-baked ideas that fall in between. So for this first episode, I decided to start with a casual topic, though one that is very dear to my heart. That's right, we're talking about Star Wars, everyone. A few days ago, I finished Bloodline, which is a Star Wars novel by Claudia Gray, and I found it to be very interesting, as it delves into some of the politics of Star Wars. If you haven't noticed, I'm quite a political person, so this spoke to me a lot. Also, I love the character of Leia Organa. I have like one of her Funko Pops like right here on my desk. I like to bop her head once in a while, so that's why I settled on this topic. Because it is a Star Wars book that takes place during the post-Return of the Jedi era, you know, so the period between episodes 6 and 7, I'm also going to talk about The Force Awakens, which is the, you know, the first Star Wars Disney film, and the ways in which it kind of disappointed me or sort of confused me in parts. And I'm going to try to sort of compare it with Bloodline, which is, again, this novel by Claudia Gray, and I'm just going to see where that gets me. I hope you'll join me, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Consider this some sort of impromptu book report. Oh, by the way, before I go on, there's going to be hella spoilers in this, both for the novel Bloodline and for The Force Awakens, because I'm, you know, going to try to critique and compare them both. So let's start talking about Bloodline. It's a novel that takes place 6 years before The Force Awakens. So Ben Solo, for example, is still a little baby Padawan, and he's not yet, you know, evil Kylo Ren who killed all the Padawans at the Jedi Temple. Oh, wait, is that a spoiler for The Last Jedi? I think it's implied. No, it's implied by The Force Awakens. Never mind. It's not about Kylo Ren. It's about... it's not about any of the main characters, really, except for Leia Organa. You know, Princess Leia, we know her from the original trilogy, but the war has been won against the Empire, so what's she doing? Well, she's just hanging out in the New Republic. The New Republic is the government that followed after the victory of the rebellion over the Empire in the original trilogy. And the New Republic, as the name suggests, is like a government that follows on the Old Republic. And is often the case, you know, with governments that follow other governments and try to emulate them. You know, they're kind of prone to the same mistakes, as we'll see further ahead. Anyway, Leia is an influential senator, so she's part of the Senate, which is like the main parliament of the galaxy, basically. Not every world is part of the New Republic, but most of them, so she's a pretty influential politician. And right away, you know, when you start reading this novel, it's pretty clear that it's a time of peace, it's very passive, and Leia, you know, we know her as a character of action, you know, fearless. She's just bored, you know, she's in the Senate, and there's nothing to do, because the Senate itself is kind of, you know, bureaucratic and incompetent. It's that sort of government, that sort of parliament. We'll get more into that later. And so she's just like, very bored, and then suddenly there's this call from an emissary from Ryloth. Ryloth in Star Wars is the planet where the Twi'leks come from. The Twi'leks are they're one of the more familiar Star Wars races. They're the guys with the head tails, if that makes sense. Like, one of them is an advisor to Jabba the Hutt. This emissary arrives, and he's like, well, there's this huge criminal network that's plaguing our commerce, our traffic. And they're probably dealing drugs, and they're intercepting our trade. So can anyone in the New Republic do something about that? And Leia steps up to the chance, because she's like, finally, there's something concrete I can do. There's some sort of adventure that I can get into. And from there, the novel develops. It gets somewhat more action-packed, I'd say. But the interesting part about this novel, and why it's sort of, it's still stuck in my head, is because it's not about the action. There's, of course, a lot of tension and conflict as in, you know, most novels, but it's mostly driven by the relations between the characters, and it's mostly driven about sort of like the political intrigue. And I noticed while reading the book that a lot of it deals with like the specific emotions or positions of characters and the way they try to sort of deceive one another, trick one another, or sort of gauge each other's reaction, sort of seeing on what side they are, because it's kind of dealing with these, you know, intrigue, conspiracy, those sorts of things. So it's very much focused on conversation. You could say the conversation is the main source of action. And with that comes a lot of talk of, like I said, emotions, how they are feeling. And what I noticed was that there's sort of this through line of what I'd call like being considerate. A lot of the times in this book, Leia is trying to figure out what other characters are feeling. But the interesting thing about this is that she's not just being considerate in like a positive sense. So it's not just like, oh, I care for these people, I'll try to help them. She's also like constantly trying to get in the heads of her enemy and like trying to figure out what would their strategy be and who could they be and how can I counter them. So this novel, it's very strategic, I'd say. There's like a conspiracy that runs through this novel, and it's very systematically built up, and at every point you have to, you know, sort of be two steps ahead of your enemy. And that's how the novel builds. And then there are specific set points at which like terrible things happen. So, for example, spoiler, at one point Leia is attending a political banquet, and she's trying to sit down, and then suddenly she sees a note that says run. And she starts running, and before you know it, like, an entire Senate building's been blown up. So there are these specific, you could say literally explosive, set pieces, but most of the novel is set around them and framed around them and trying to figure out, well, what are these about? So it's not your classic, like, we have to fight without thinking and we have to be constantly on the move. And it's not like that. It's not that instinctive. It's more deliberate, more considerate, more thoughtful. That's something I really recognize. So you could say that if you've read the entire book, there's like only like three or four specific planets or missions, or you could say events that they go on, and the rest of the book is structured around thinking about them, which I thought was a pretty interesting setup, because it's not something you're generally used from Star Wars. Generally what you're used from Star Wars is like this constant action, constant drive, not much time to think about things. But here it's much more deliberative, which I think fits for a novel that's mostly about political themes. The only downside in this structure, I would say, is that the last act is a little weak. Like, throughout the novel, it's building up to this one mission that they're supposed to go on. Like, there's this hidden enemy, and they're supposed to have this big base on an underwater planet. So immediately, you know, like, oh, that's going to be a big set piece, because that's an interesting place to be. That's some interesting world building right there. So they build up towards it. And I wouldn't say it's not action-packed or it's not interesting, but it's a little shorter than I expected. And the specific conclusions of the plots, like the plot threads are sort of coming together, but a lot of them really only wrap up afterwards. There's a pretty long, you know, what you'd call a denouement. So there's a pretty long period in the book where it just sort of tries to build out its ending and sort of work towards those final few sentences. And I would say the final scene, that one's really good, but the way it builds towards that, it's kind of, I don't want to say it, but it's kind of at some points you're feeling like, oh, when this is going to be over with. Not because it's bad, because it's like Return of the King, you know, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. It's too long, basically, and it's a little understated. I would have liked it to end with, you know, a snap and a bang, but instead it's a little more calm, which isn't bad. But yeah, that's what I thought about it. Overall, in terms of how it reads and how I liked it, I would give it like out of 10 an 8.5. Like, I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. Because I think it's really good, but because that ending kind of sags, I can't really commit. So it's 8.5, which translates to 4 stars. All right, here we are in the political section. Let's get political. Immediately, I think of these people. You know, you have this very specific cadre of Star Wars fans who are like, oh, well, you're going to make Star Wars political, which I find really amusing, because this is literally just Star Wars politics, the book. And I love it. I hope you can immediately tell that I get more excited about this, because, you know, this is what I love most about Star Wars. This is what's really stuck with me as I've kept going with Star Wars. You know, you have people who go for the characters or the visuals, and those are amazing, don't get me wrong. But, like, the way that Star Wars takes these pieces from history, I recently heard, Doug Chang. He was an art director on the Star Wars prequels. He said that George Lucas sees Star Wars as a period piece, as like this historical collage, which I think is really cool because it recontextualizes Star Wars from something which, you know, is sometimes vulgarly called a science fiction franchise, which I think it's really not. Not that science fiction is bad, but it's just not what it is. And then people slot it into fantasy, which I think is more appropriate, but specifically it's like, it's this historical collage. And with that comes politics, because, you know, politics is the stuff of history. So, for example, I found that the general setting of the New Republic, so like 25 years after a victory has been won, you have this new government, but it's kind of like stale, bureaucratic, it's kind of, it's not very powerful, it's very decentralized, which is not bad, but it's decentralized in that way where, like, it's ineffective in any way. It's just a bunch of people getting together and deciding on nothing. And I find that situation, and the book is sometimes quite explicit about this, it mirrors to me, but this is specific to me because I happen to have been thinking and reading about this. It's very similar to the sort of the prelude to the American Civil War. Why do I say that? Well, firstly, I find that Star Wars takes a lot from American history. You know, the original Star Wars has sometimes been called the Vietnam War in space, and there's some truth to that. Like, the evil empire has always been, to me, sort of a amalgamation between, like, the very, very evil Nazis, kind of toned down, you could say, or it's like American empire turned up. It's always sort of, to me, between those two extremes of evil. Like, it's not fully Nazi evil. Well, sometimes it is. And then sometimes it's more like American. Sorry, this is a tangent. No, I was just trying to say, in general, Star Wars takes a lot from American history. And specifically, this is taken a lot from the prelude to the American Civil War. Now, why do I say that? Well, firstly, if you look at the constitution of the New Republic Senate, and I don't mean their constitution as in the document, but the way it's made up, there's very clearly a two-party system, which again brings like Anglo-American politics to mind, but specifically American politics, because you have the centrists, they're called, and the populists. These two terms don't have too much to do with real-world terms. I heard they were cooked up by Rian Johnson, the director of The Last Jedi, in consultation with Claudia Gray, the author. The two of them, they sort of created this political situation. And so you have the populists and the centrists. And the interesting thing about this is that they don't mirror the traditional left-right divide of, like, world politics or American politics specifically. So in that sense, they're not similar. But what they did, I don't know if any of you have ever seen a political compass. I will assume you have. On the political compass, you generally have the left-right spectrum, and then you have the authoritarian-libertarian spectrum. I don't find that to be too accurate, but that's generally how it's portrayed. And the two parties of the New Republic in this novel mostly correspond not to the horizontal divide, so between left and right, but the vertical axis, so between authoritarian and libertarian. And I find that the centrist party, they're basically the authoritarian. So you have some people, they're very clearly like imperial nostalgists. So they look back at this galactic civil war that happened 20 years ago, and they're like, oh, well, maybe the empire wasn't all bad, and maybe we can salvage some good things out of this. There's specifically one character in the book who completely embodies this philosophy, but there's some who go even farther, like into full what I'd call the equivalent of like neo-Nazi territory. So that's really frightening. There's actually one short bit in the book where they say there's like two wings of the centrist party. So you have like these imperial romanticists who just want to have like big military, and then you have what I find amusingly to sort of be reminiscent of like authoritarian socialists. So they're like, oh, we need to control all aspects of people's lives, which is not really reminiscent of like the Soviet Union and stuff, but it does call to mind like the sort of tradition of stereotypical totalitarianism that you see in like George Orwell. It's basically a parody of what American politicians think socialism is. So that was kind of an amusing aside to me in the book. So that's the centrist party. And then you'd think the Populist Party is better. And to a large extent it is because, well, for starters, Leia is herself a member of the Populists. They could have had like a really cynical way of writing this book. They could have been like, oh no, Leia is sort of in the middle and she's constantly trying to compromise. No, she's just a good, you know, moderate. And she sort of is, but like she very clearly has party allegiances in the sense that she doesn't want any greater authority vested in the New Republic as a whole. She does have some ideas about how it might be streamlined, how the government might be improved upon, but she's very clearly not like a capital C centrist because she does not like the Empire, obviously, and she does not want anything like it to come back that leads to some conflict in the book itself. And so the Populists, they want to keep as much independence, as much autonomy for the individual worlds that make up the New Republic as much as possible. And then again, you have left and right wings. So the right wings, they're more like, well, real life right libertarians. So they just want to be able to trade as much as they want. But then the left libertarians, they're more like, no, the world should not have any source of tyranny. So we should just, you know, everyone be independent, maybe some federations here and there. But it's like the Star Wars equivalent of municipalism or something. I say that because I've recently been reading some Murray Bookchin. So for all you social ecologists out there, yeah, it's the closest thing. So these are the centrists and the populists. And to me, they correspond not directly to the Democrats and the Republicans, but it's very clear that there's one party that really wants to stoke war, and then there's another party that doesn't want that at all. Because, again, the New Republic is in peacetime, but the centrists, they're willing to sort of, near the end of the book, spoilers, they sort of get into this. Like, the centrists, the core of them are just conspirators. They're pro-imperial conspirators, and they've conspired with these imperial remnant hiding out in the unknown regions, which we know as the First Order, and that name is name-dropped a few times. So they're just conspirators, and they're willing to, and this is the point where I say it's very similar to American Civil War, they're willing to secede. They're willing to separate the centrist worlds and just go with the First Order, bring in the rebuilt imperial fleet, and then just completely wreck the place. Sort of like what happened at the start of The Last Jedi, like how the fleets of the new First Order are just moving into the New Republic and taking shit over. That's sort of what they want. Yeah. And then the populists, they have no idea about this conspiracy, of course. That's why it's a conspiracy. And they just want to sort of keep muddling about. And that's a problem because the New Republic is in deadlock, gridlock. Nothing, no good legislation is being passed. It's a sort of government where there's way more discussion than, you know, actual motions being assumed or rejected. Everything is being tabled. It's a very incompetent and inefficient government. The best thing you could say about it is that it's like keeping the peace, but only barely, in the sense that like if the First Order were to move in, they could just walk all over the New Republic. So it's very incompetent, very inefficient. And throughout the book, Leia is like, we have to do something. That appeals to her in like a personal sense. So she feels ineffective personally, but she's also like, the entire government is incompetent. The main conflict about the book, as might be expected, is Leia finding out about this conspiracy. Like I said, she starts off looking into this criminal network based off this emissary from Ryloth, but as it turns out, this criminal network is being fed by funds from an even more shadowy organization, which we know to be the First Order, but she traces that to this paramilitary organization called the Amaxine Warriors. And the Amaxine Warriors, they're basically the alt-right. They're like Proud Boys. They're like these kind of guys who get together and they're nostalgic about the Star Wars equivalent of white supremacy or whatever. And they're this paramilitary organization that's secretly being funded by the First Order. And throughout the book, these First Order people are basically saying like, oh right, these Amaxine Warriors, they're useful as cannon fodder. They're useful as a vanguard. They're the sort of people who go in, create a lot of chaos, create a lot of destruction, just completely confuse the hell out of the New Republic. And that's when we move in and bring order. So they're supposed to be sort of the sacrificial vanguard. And the Amaxine Warriors, yeah, they're definitely sort of like the First Order, but even more chaotic, even more terroristic. They're the guys who are behind the Senate bombing I mentioned earlier. And throughout the book, Leia is trying to, you know, hunt down the secret army and bring them down. And that's really cool because, like I said, that brings up this huge political conspiracy. And that's what the book's about. It's great. What it's also been reminding me of, this is again where I pull in real world references, is I've recently been listening to this other podcast, which I would highly recommend. It's called It Could Happen Here. I believe it's by a man named Robert Evans, who's like this investigative journalist. He's a leftist, as am I, of course. And he does a lot of research into far-right extremist groups. And this specific podcast, It Could Happen Here, sort of talks about civil wars and how a second American Civil War might be possible and what that would be like. So he also pulls examples out of contemporary times and out of history to sort of sketch this future scenario. And I would recommend that to you because I find that there's a lot of interesting synthesis to be made possible between this specific Star Wars book, which is about like far-right terrorism. It is about secret conspiracies to bring down a peaceful government, just as you could say that like the American government, not that there's a conspiracy in the American government, but there are these, you know, I don't think this is too controversial, but like there are these vested interests in any government, especially one as huge and as imperialist as the US government, like the military industrial complex, like the fossil fuel industry, like all these powerful lobbies that exist to sort of, you know, shift the power of state one way or another. And you could say that the same is happening in Bloodline, because on the one hand, you have this specific political conspiracy of neo-Nazis or fascists that want to topple the government and bring back sort of a more authoritarian imperial regime. We know from The Last Jedi, which is another reason why I like that film so much, is that we know that there is this huge, again, a military industrial complex, all these weapons manufacturers that make bank every time there's some sort of military expansion, every time there's more central authority, every time there's war. So you could say that this centrist conspiracy to topple the New Republic government, bring in the First Order, that's probably being backed by these same weapons manufacturers who stand to gain a lot if the New Republic or its successor government were to get more autocratic, more fascistic, more militaristic. And I believe there's even some scenes in the book where like some centrists are like constantly pushing for more military appropriations or for more central authority being invested into either the Senate or this new position called the First Senator. That's sort of a subplot that runs through this book where it's like the centrists, they pass a motion where they're like, all right, let's just have the equivalent of like a US president, like this powerful executive figure. And that leads to this election that, spoilers, never really ends up happening, but it does create a political tension that then throughout the book is exploited one way or the other. Like that really drives the plot. Anyway, what was I getting at here? Well, just again, there's like these very interesting parallels with our real life history, US history specifically, but also like what I would see as an implicit leftist or at least anti-fascist ethos. Like it clearly opposes the rise of the First Order. It clearly opposes authoritarianism and conspiracy and just plotting to destroy a government just because you want it to be more fascist or more militaristic. And what that leads up to is in the very last scene of the book, it's Princess Leia who realizes that this government is rotten to the core because they do some, you know, the centrists, they get up to some bad stuff, especially near the end of the book. And she realizes, yeah, this government, it's going to fall. There's going to be war. It's inevitable that this government will break down. So she sort of turns into one of these people that you had near the start or just before the American Civil War, the real life historical American Civil War, who were like, yeah, war is coming and we need to prepare. And she's like, yeah, we need to prepare. So I'm going to start my own little paramilitary in kind of like an ironic twist on the Amaxine warriors. But my paramilitary is not going to be about like fostering destruction and confusion. It's going to be about countering this mysterious fascist threat that nobody apparently believes in but me and the people who are loyal to me. And what I'm leading up to here is, of course, that this turns Leia into the leader of the Resistance, which is an important organization in the sequel trilogy because she founds it at the end of this book. And even more importantly, like if you look at the Resistance and the reasons for why it was founded and you put that into a real life historical perspective, then, and brace yourselves, Leia is basically declaring herself the queen of Antifa. She's basically the anti-fascist princess. How hardcore is it that in the year of our Lord 2019, we can just have a book about Princess Leia just starting this anti-fascist militia. I find that really powerful. Of course, these themes have always been a part of Star Wars, but this political novel allows them to come out more explicitly, and that's something I really appreciate. And for that very reason, I would love for there to be a sequel to this book, because I really want to see how Leia goes about organizing this organization in the 6-year gap between this book and The Force Awakens, and specifically how she deals with the fact that at some point, you know, her own son will join the First Order, because that has to happen, because that happens before The Force Awakens, and how she deals with that specifically. Again, I've tried to tell you about this political element, and I think it's absolutely fascinating and awesome, especially these connections that you can make with real life history, our contemporary times, historical times, anti-fascism, fascism, capitalism, imperialism, you know, all these buzzwords. You can just throw them at this book and you'll be satisfied. That's what I really like. I see we're almost passing the half hour mark. Well, I did not think this would last this long, but there's more to come because we need to talk about The Force Awakens. Stay tuned. For those of you who don't know, this book, Bloodline, came out in 2016, and The Force Awakens came out in 2015. And what that meant for people in general, and for me specifically, because didn't read Bloodline until last week, was that for a long time, people were confused about the political situation during The Force Awakens, me being among them. Because I don't recall what the opening crawl says exactly, but it tries to sort of say, all right, there's the New Republic, and there's the First Order, but there's also the Resistance, and they have some sort of relationship with each other, but we're not really clear. And I mean, I get it. Like, the film itself, if you watch it, it's not really about the political situation, so it doesn't really matter if they weren't too clear about it, but, you know, for the nerds like me, the ones who actually like the history and the politics as their primary aspect of Star Wars, it was a little disappointing and it was a little confusing. So that's one of the main drawbacks for me about The Force Awakens. Especially, and we have to talk about this, there's a big planet-destroying device in The Force Awakens called Starkiller Base. And near the halfway point of the film, it blows up the capital worlds of the New Republic, which effectively, you know, decapitates the New Republic of its leadership. I'm sure that some populists would say, some radical populists would say, good riddance, because now we can be autonomous. But, you know, that collapses the New Republic, or whatever shriveled remnant was left of it, completely. It collapses it. And then by the time of The Last Jedi, which takes place like a few days later, the First Order fleets are just moving into the territory and the New Republic is no more. And by the time of The Last Jedi, we sort of knew that. But when I watched The Force Awakens, I was like, come on, we only saw the New Republic for like 5 seconds before it got blown up, because we did not yet have these books that were taking place between like the end of the Galactic Civil War and The Force Awakens. So as far as we knew, like, you just go straight from 6 to 7 and it's back to war. So what use was the peace? And we don't know what the peace is like. That's the core disappointment to me. And having Starkiller Base destroy New Republic, have that be destroyed by Starkiller Base, and then have Starkiller Base be destroyed later on in the film, like, it felt easy. I'm trying not to be too hard on J.J. Abrams and the other writers, because, you know, it's a good film, the good character is great, but yeah, the political situation does leave something to be desired. So what I'd like to do here, especially in the light of Bloodline having this really strong political element, is kind of go through this state of affairs and see if I can, I don't want to say improve on it, but just sort of tell you what I would have liked to have seen. And I know there's hundreds of fan takes like this out there, and I'm not trying to say that The Force Awakens is a terrible film, but it probably is one of my less favorite Star Wars films. And again, this political element factors into it. And this brings me to a point that might surprise some of you, because I actually think that The Force Awakens can take some lessons from Attack of the Clones. By that surprising is because Attack of the Clones is generally seen as like one of the weaker of the Star Wars films, specifically the weakest probably of the prequel films. But I think that Attack of the Clones has a very strong political element, especially in its first half, and I think that The Force Awakens can take from that. To be honest, like, for a long time, I admit that Attack of the Clones was one of my least favorite Star Wars films, probably my least favorite. But recently I rewatched it and I liked it a lot. Like, to be fair, I liked its first half a lot. From the point they go to Geonosis, from the point Padme and Anakin fight their way through the droid factory, I think it turns into too much of an action film and the political trail that's been going on before that gets lost. But I think the first half or first two-thirds, whatever you'd call it, of that film is good because there's this, like I said, this really strong political element. It's about the Old Republic being in the middle of a political crisis because there's all these worlds being led by Count Dooku who want to separate from it. And some of them are even trying to assassinate Amidala because she's like a political rival and she's one of these strong up-and-coming politicians who might be able to maybe keep the galaxy from sliding into war. But the entire film is sort of this big conspiracy, which you presume is by Count Dooku, but actually is a conspiracy about Darth Sidious, about of Palpatine, to foment this war in the Republic. And once he's created that war, he can exploit it to, you know, gain more authority and eventually topple the Republic and declare the Empire. That's his long-term goal. So again, I hope you've noticed, but there are some similarities between Attack of the Clones and Bloodline in the sense that they're dealing with this incompetent Republican government that's sort of walking into a trap, walking into a war, and that has to be prevented. And ultimately, it's a tragedy, and our heroes just find themselves, you know, having to do war. And Leia's in the same situation because she has to start this paramilitary organization. And within 6 years, the First Order comes. And what's been a cold war before, what's been a slumbering conflict before, just blows out into open war. And that's what happens in Attack of the Clones. So I think that The Force Awakens should have taken more from, well, one, what would become Bloodline, and two, what was Attack of the Clones. I admit, this would have been a really different film. I don't think you could have involved characters like Finn and Rey. Maybe Poe could have stayed, but here's what I see happening. What I see happening is a film that's about how did the galaxy go back into war. So it's about Leia, and she's in the Senate, and she's with the populists, and the Senate is again in deadlock, and it's just on the brink of collapsing. Why? Because there's the First Order. But the First Order is not part of the Senate. The First Order is this movement, like in the movies, like on the far edges in the unknown regions, Imperial remnant. But they have sponsors. They have friends in the Senate, which are these extreme centrists. And instead of it being like an out-and-out conspiracy, it's just more controversial. Like someone like General Hux, like that guy, he can go to the Senate. He can shake hands with centrist senators and talk about the ongoing peace between the New Republic and the First Order and how good it is or something, like he's going to lie through his teeth. But he's going to try to steer the New Republic and specifically the centrist worlds towards secession. And Leia sees this coming, but it's subtle enough that most of the moderates in the Senate chamber are like, oh, well, nothing much is happening. Oh, whatever. So that's the situation. Very politically volatile, could break down at any moment. And at the same time, Leia is running her own little resistance. And she's being criticized for that in the Senate because they're like, oh, well, Leia, you're sending these Antifa super soldiers after the First Order, even though we're at peace with the First Order. You're the one who's creating chaos and destruction. It's not us, the centrist senators, who are conspiring with a fascist organization to, you know, eventually bring authoritarianism back to the New Republic. No, 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 no. It's you and your rabble rousers in the resistance who are just completely wrecking the galaxy. I hope you see what sort of analogy I'm going for here. This is the contemporary GOP lambasting Democrats for siding with Antifa terrorists or whatever, but transposed into a Star Wars situation. You could say, of course, like maybe Star Wars shouldn't delve too deeply into these sensitive topics, but I mean, hey, the first Star Wars was very obviously about the Vietnam War, and it took place only, what is it, 3 years after that war ended or something? So I don't think that's too controversial. And I think like the analogy there, it's too good to pass up. So that's the general situation I see for a Force Awakens directed by Moon. Another difference, this is more character driven, is of course Kylo Ren. I still see a good role for Ben Solo going evil. But in this case, it would of course be even more wounding to Leia, because I could see Kylo Ren just stepping into the Senate and just being invited as a guest of the Senate. Like the New Republic has devolved to the point where they don't even realize that, like, they're just inviting the equivalent of Darth Vader into their home. Like, they've just completely given up on, like, actually being anti-fascist. And Leia's one of those few people left who is willing to go that far. But the problem is, that means she's siding against her son. And maybe we could go so far as to have Kylo Ren just be openly Ben Solo. Just be openly like, yes, no, Luke Skywalker, he was misguided. I am the true legacy of the Skywalkers. And that's me. He could be the aristocratic face of the Skywalker lineage. Because, you know, the Skywalker family, it's filled with queens and princesses and, by extension, princes, you know? So what if Kylo Ren was the one to say, like, all right, I assume these royal titles. Like, call me whatever. I am the true heir of Skywalker. I am the Skywalker who is rising, just to make a fun stab at episode 9. So that's what I see this other alternate universe Force Awakens being. You have Leia, you have Ben Solo, she's struggling with her son, and there's the Senate politics going on. And eventually, what I think would be a great irony is if there's some sort of trickery on the part of the First Order. So there's no, again, let me be obvious, like there's no Starkiller base. There's no big ball that goes boom. The danger is more subtle, like in Attack of the Clones. And so what's going to happen is the First Order is going to sort of trick Leia into thinking that, yes, they're going to plan the coup, the big secession event. It's going to happen next week. And so Leia's going to be like, oh no, they're planning to, you know, bring guns into the Senate and take everything over. I have to stop them. So Leia is going to march into the Senate. She's going to have her guns. She's going to have her resistance soldiers with her. And she's going to be like, all right, I'm here. I'm here to stop the First Order. And the rest of the Senate's going to be like, there's no First Order here. What are you talking about? You barge into the Senate with your arms and you demand that we submit to you? Like, it's going to seem, again, like Leia is the aggressor, whereas she's really, of course, the one who's trying to save it all. And that irony is going to set up a lot more senators to sort of be more friendly to the First Order. And it's going to probably cause Leia to be put out of favor. And that's how I see that happening. Again, I've not really developed this idea properly, because if I did, I would just write it into an essay and I wouldn't be talking to you today. But that's where I see it heading. That's the sort of bloodline mixed with Attack of the Clones, mixed with the Force Awakens film that's been stuck in my head for a while now. Yeah, I think that's it. That's what I had to say. I hope I didn't get too rambly near the end here, because that was the sound of me running out of ideas or just trying to like squeeze the last remaining ideas out of myself. But I am very happy to have emptied these notes. As the title goes, these notes are empty. My work here is done. I hope to see you next time. Maybe I'll be talking about Star Wars. Maybe I'll be talking about politics more. Maybe I'll just be, I don't know, talking about space. We'll see. I hope you'll join me next time. I hope you enjoyed it. This is Moon, signing off.